Welcome to New Zealand Vegan Podcast. I'm your host, Elizabeth Collins. I really thought that I was going to be doing more podcasts in the last few weeks, but something unexpected happened. I have a family member who ended up in hospital, and I've been very busy dealing with that. You know, it's just sort of part of getting older and people get sick. And it's very fortunate in a way because it happened on the day of my second to last exam, but I didn't find out about it until after my exam. However, oh, and I passed. Yay. Okay. But I've been, because I'm only working part time and I've just graduated, I got through my exams, you know, the emergency was, it didn't prevent me from attending my exams. And I live close to the hospital, and so I've actually been going there every day, and I'm in a really good position to do that because I work part-time, and although I am looking for a job, it's just been really fortunate that I've had all this spare time to go to the hospital and do laundry and deal with the social workers and now the discharge is coming up, and I'm sure other people who know what it's like to have a relative in hospital and you're dealing with discharge, and occupational therapists are going to go to the house and set things up. We thought maybe there was going to be a migration to a rest home, but that plan has been changed. So anyway, again, I'm coming up with excuses as to why I haven't done my podcast, but yeah, this is what happens, and that's why I haven't been around. I was supposed to do a podcast with William about the New Zealand Vegetarian Festival, and that happened, oh my goodness, I don't even know when, I think it was October. So, but we are going to do it because it's still relevant, it's always relevant. Anyway, I'm doing this podcast today because I've been really, really occupied with my relative who's in hospital. However, I've also been occupied lately in the last couple of weeks since the sort of emergency situation died down with the wonderful new forum on abolitionistapproach.com. It's so awesome. There's a forum that's on Gary Francione's website, and Gary Francione talked about it in his last podcast, and so I've been spending a lot of time on that, but I haven't done any podcasts, and there's so many important things to talk about. But as per usual, I just have to do this podcast tonight because I got to thinking about something, and I just had to get it out. And it was inspired by a few different things. One of the things that inspired it was actually a thread on the forum, and the thread is called Fears. The forum is public, so people can kind of see the discussions without, even if they're not a member, they can actually read the discussions that are going on. I think it's a really interesting place to have a look at. So it's abolitionistapproach.com forum. Well, anyway, you'll see the link on the front page. But one of the threads, and I haven't actually participated in the thread, but I just haven't got around to posting in it. But I've read most of it anyway, and it's called Fears, and most of it in the beginning centered around people's fears about their non-human refugees, and we're talking like panic-stricken fear. And there was all kinds of sentiments on this thread, and I could relate to every single one. And something happened that, basically, I have some bad news. This is not going to be a negative podcast. It's not going to necessarily be a positive podcast. It's going to be sort of a therapy as usual. But unfortunately, and this has all happened sort of at the same time as this whole hospital thing, and I just haven't had a chance to talk about it or really deal with it. But my dear, beautiful Duffy, the stray cat who came to me looking for a home, and I tried my best to find him one, the person I adopted him to was not responsible. And even though, well, basically what happened is he disappeared. And on the 28th of October, I got a text because I was keeping in touch constantly with the adoptive parents who had been letting him out. And I said, well, you know, you said you weren't going to let him out and because he needs to stay inside. And they had this big, beautiful house. And it was like, oh, well, I'm not going to. There was, I don't even know what to say. And I said, well, look, you know, do you want me to come and get him? And I said, no, he's fine. You know, he goes out during the day. He stays out of trouble. He comes in, he eats, and he gets cuddles and stuff. And they were kind of like, no, no, no. And I said, look, if it's not working out, I'll come and get him, even though I was sort of desperately thinking, what am I going to do? I still. And anyway, I got a text on about 6 days after the 28th of October. So this is now going back to what, 28th or whatever it is, 5th of November, whatever. I can't do the math. And basically, the text was very blasé. It was like, oh, by the way, we haven't seen Duffy for 6 days. And of course, I went into full-on panic mode and I texted back and, oh man. So I put ads, because his microchip is still in my name. I got him microchipped. I know that's such a horrible thing, isn't it? I got him microchipped. It's like, oh my gosh. But I truly believe it's a way to help keep them safe, and I'll go into that later. But anyway, the microchip information has still got my name and phone number. So if he gets picked up by the SPCA or if he gets picked up by animal control, they tell me, they told me, they definitely scan every single animal that they pick up. And because we're in New Zealand and we're not dealing with millions, it's not like New York City where there's like literally thousands a day. I did ring them and say, are you sure? And I asked them to check to see if anybody had been picked up in the last few days who fit his description, and no. And if he did get picked up and scanned, it would they would call me. I'm his, I'm on that information thing. And I haven't received any call now, as we know, it's like over a month. So yes, I am heartbroken. And I feel guilty. But I put ads and I'm going to renew the ads. They need to be renewed. And I have not received one single word. And part of me is trying to be positive because I don't know what happened. And I talked to people at the vet where I work and they said, look, he was such an awesome cat. He really, really was. I mean, just watch the videos. He was such an awesome. I mean, all cats are awesome, but when with regard to adoptability, with regard to in this world that we live in, where people can pick and choose their pets. I remember Adam Kahanowitz did a fantastic analysis, and I can't remember, he did it on a tweet and he did it in a few other places, and I think he did it in a podcast that we did together, where he's like, you can customize your pet like you can your car or your computer or something like that. And they've got millions of them to choose from. So in that world, with the species population, he was very adoptable, apart from the fact that he had FIV. But, he was just so friendly and so touchable, and a lot of people like that. So my dearest hope is that he didn't like where he lived, and I feel bad about that. Maybe it was the little children there. I don't know. And that he found some, he went, he just wandered off because he was a wanderer, and he went and looked, he was looking for a home. That's why he came to me. So my dearest hope is that somebody took him in and he's okay. And, because he was just such a cool cat. And with regard to adoptability, with regard to people who want a cat that's friendly and who's cuddly and all that kind of stuff. I mean, I know that I will, like, if I ever have the opportunity to adopt, like, if I ever have the opportunity to actually go and adopt from the SPCA or something like that, I'm going to choose the least adoptable. Like, I'm going to be like, who's on death row? And who is the sort of one that you're like, nobody's going to adopt, I'm just going to kill them? Because they're the ones who get killed right away. Buddha wouldn't let me, I put up with the fact that that Buddha is not very cuddly and everything like that now. In the beginning, I used to sort of resent it, but I was really, I didn't have my head on my shoulders then. But I will be like that. Like, I don't care if that, she spends her whole life, like, kind of like telling me to go away, and as long as I just keep her safe and stuff, and save her life, because they're the ones who don't get adopted, the older ones and the sicker ones, and the ones who are, scared of people and stuff like that. People don't want them, they, why, these people, it's like, why am I going to buy, it's like a commodity, as we all know. So anyway, I'm rambling, but as usual. But yeah, I hope that somebody took him in and that he's okay. I don't know what happened to him. And well, so going back to the theme of this, so this was, I told people about this. Most of the people I talk to about things like this are my fellow vegans, because they really understand, especially abolitionists, because abolitionists understand that the institution of pets is wrong, and why it's wrong, and they can really relate to the entire deal. So I also spoke to other, well, everybody that I work with is really sympathetic, they know the realities of the situation. I mean, people who work, whether they're non-vegans or whatever, people who work in the sort of animal businesses, whether it's SPCA or a vet or whatever, they know what really goes on. They know how dangerous it is out there. They know what happens to these animals, So they're very realistic about it. And they were trying to reassure me. They said, look, his personality was very, very likable. He's probably okay. And the reason you haven't heard anything is because somebody took him in. But of course, I have this terrible fear that something happened to him. And I do think about him pretty much every day. And I'm trying to be positive and think good thoughts because, as I don't know, I might as well think good thoughts as long as I don't know. There's really no point, and it doesn't achieve anything to torture myself with negative thoughts. But they still fly in your brain. They fly in your brain. So, okay, I'm not going to make this a negative podcast. That's what happened, and I'm distressed about it. I just really want to communicate. The idea of this podcast is when I was reading the thing, when I was reading the thread about fears, and a lot of the fears were about their, these refugees, and I was telling, and it was triggered. And I was thinking about that, and I'm like, I really want to talk about this. And then I was telling one of my family members about Duffy, and I often don't even bother because I'm like, no offense to the family member, but I said, I did say something negative. I was like, I'm so, something really terrible could have happened to him. And they're like, oh yeah, of course, something terrible happened. And basically the general attitude, which is very, very common, as we all know, is, oh, for goodness sake, look, this is a cat. He's, do and they said, you know, they said, he's doing what he was doing when you found him. He's surviving. Because everybody's like, cats are these amazing superheroes and they can live out in the streets and they're just incredible. And I mean, I'm not emasculating them. I mean, they are pretty incredibly hardy and survive, and they can survive. But see, this person does not sort of investigate the realities of feral cats. And I audited the SPCA. Well, I didn't audit them. Sorry, I looked at their, what's the word? I looked at their annual report a couple of times last year when I was trying to. I was trying to have a discussion with somebody about, how they just kill a lot of animals, and they kill like 10,000 animals a year here in New Zealand. And there's terrible things can happen to them out there, and this is why. It's because they are property. They're commodities. There's no protection for them. They can be killed at any time. They can be picked up and killed by accident. They could forget to scan him, or they could have tested him for FIV. I mean, I remember when I took him in, and I was so hopeful, And then we did the test. It was just like such a matter of course. And then everybody came out of the room, and their faces were like, "Oh my goodness!" And they were like, "He tested positive." And I said, "Whoa!" And they were like, "We just couldn't believe it either." And we talked a little bit, and la la la. And it's not a death sentence, and it's not the end. There's no reason for this cat not to have a wonderful, productive life and to not infect any other cat, if the right precautions are taken, which, well, at least he was neutered, so he wouldn't fight, But anyway, and they said to me, "Oh, if you took him to the SPCA, they would just kill him immediately. I mean, that would be number one on the kill list, would be an FIV positive cat at the SPCA." So, if they didn't bother to scan him and they tested him or whatever, and all kinds of things go on, and they get hit by cars, and our world, we, the funny thing is, I am not taking anything away from we when it comes to domesticated non-humans, especially pets that get out, like even like pet birds or pet rabbits or pet cats or pet dogs that are abandoned or are lost or whatever happens. We're their biggest danger. I mean, if we weren't around with our machines and our cars and our deadly physical force that we, and our violence, they would probably be quite all right. I mean, they would work it out. They would work it out somehow. Somehow or other, there would be probably some sort of balance. We're their biggest danger out there. And I know this, we know this. And so anyway, I was telling this person, and I knew it was going to happen. I got upset because, I mean, maybe they were trying to make me feel better in the way that they knew how, because their experience is very different from mine, and their attitude is very different from mine. So I'm not saying they were deliberately trying to upset me. They were actually trying to comfort me, but it was still not empathetic to the fact that, I mean, they were just like, I mean, they made fun of me when I had Buddha, and this will get back to the fear story. When I brought Buddha to New Zealand, I'd already decided to do it, and I put everything into place, but I went vegan right before I come, and so my whole attitude towards her changed. And then I learned about abolitionism, and I read about, Gary Francione's, and non-human animals as moral persons and things, and that just changed a fundamental way that I looked at her. And so my interest in her well-being was taken to a different level, So, and this goes back to the fear thread. So, and I didn't tell anybody else about this because I couldn't talk to my family about this because they would just sort of laugh and they'd be like, "You're crazy." And I remember this family member was like, "Why don't you put her in a bubble? Put her in a bubble," like making fun, because here people are very kind of blasé about their dogs and cats. They'll leave the dogs outside all night long in the winter and in the summer. I mean, dogs are work dogs. I mean, it doesn't just happen in New Zealand; it happens everywhere. And cats, they just, they're able to, they just kind of like really blasé about them. I mean, not saying they don't care about them, but they're like, the cats here really are outdoor cats, and there's a lot of space for them, and there's not a huge population, I mean, compared to other places in the world. But when I first lived with Buddha, going back to what he said about putting her in a bubble and stuff, when I talked about Duffy, I tried to talk about it because it was bothering me. It bothers me a lot. I talked to William about it, and of course William understood, and William, and I talked to other people about it on the forum, and I talked to all my friends about it, and they really helped me. But I was just talking about it that day, and they were kind of ridiculing me, and they were like, "Gosh, stop worrying," and of course, making fun of the fact that I was like, something bad happened. Well, I know they're trying to comfort me, and yes, I shouldn't assume something bad happened, but the fear is there. And you know what? When you read this thread, the fear, and I'm now finally getting to the point. I was thinking about it. I was like, okay, am I being unreasonable? And I thought, and what prompted me to sort of try to put these thoughts together was, I was like, okay, what if I had human children? What if I had children? What kind of a mother would I be? Would I be one of those mothers who would never let their kid ride a bike, never let their kid go to the park, never let their kid do anything? And I thought to myself, you know what? No, it's different with non-human animals. And the reason it's different, and the reason we are so terrified, is because they are not moral persons. They're not members of the moral community, whether we like it or not. If Duffy has gone missing, if that was a human child, the police would be involved. There would probably be a story in the newspapers and the TV. And I'm not detracting from the terribleness of missing children. I'm not saying that it doesn't happen and that when it happens, it's terribly unjust and it's horrible for the families and stuff. I'm just saying that with human children, there are contingencies in place. The society is behind you. There are, in my society, I can only speak from my own experiences. If my child gets sick, there is a social system here that will pay for the care of, if I can't afford to pay for the doctor for my child, or my child gets a life-threatening illness, I can take my child to hospital and they will treat her or him. And if I can't afford to pay for it, they'll either, the government will pay for it or whatever, and including medication and long-term care, and there are all kinds of things in place. If my child goes missing, the police will get involved, the whole community will get involved. There will be newspaper stories, if it's just so different. Whereas with this a cat, forget it. I mean, I was ringing around and they're like, "Well, is he microchipped?" And I'm like, "Yeah." And they're like, "Oh, well, okay." And I know the realities there are because non-humans breed in a way where there is the cats or dogs or other non-humans, rabbits, they go into heat, 3 or 4 times a year maybe, and they have like maybe 3 or 4, children each time. And so we're talking like thousands and thousands. And, you know, the reality is we're 6.2 billion. I would imagine there were many more non-human stray animals because of the way that they breed, which is why we really need to eradicate domestication. You know, so I know that, you know, the reality is, and because of their lifestyle and because of the way they are, like, it'd be almost next to impossible to really find, you know, Duffy. Even if the police were to get involved and stuff, you know, the odds are just against it. And there's just, like, more reason to oppose domestication, including pets. You know, this is more reason for it. This fear, you know, I'll get back to Buddha. After I moved to New Zealand, I remember, like, for the first, when I moved out of my mother's house, because when I was living with my mother's house, I only lived there for a little while because it was really bad for Buddha, because she couldn't leave my room. My room was really small. My mother's house was really small. And she literally couldn't leave my room because my mother's cat was an outdoor-indoor cat and had a cat door and wanted to kill her, man. And I mean, like, it would have been hospitalization, okay? For real. And so Buddha was locked in my room, his tiny room, all day. It was worse than anything we've been through in New York. And believe me, Buddha has been through a lot of locked in and horrible things in New York because I never really had my own place to live. And so when I finally moved to my own place, we lived in a basement, and the landlord's cat wanted to kill her too. It was just as bad. So she was still an indoor cat, and she still didn't go out, even though she really hated it at that point because she could see out, and it was different from New York where it's just a hallway. She could see the trees and stuff, and she wanted to go out there. But I would be on my way home, and this happened for months and months, and this is like the fear thread. I would be walking home, and I would be positive, like, I was going to get home, and she would be like dead or like injured, horribly injured. And I was imagining all these terrible scenarios happening to her, and I was really broke. You know, I had really little money. And I would torch, like, I'd be walking home, and I would just, my heart would just, when I would see her at the window, oh, the relief was just palpable. And I never shared anybody, you know, these terrible fears I had of coming home and finding her, all kinds of terrible scenarios. I mean, I would imagine terrible things. I'm not going to go into it, but I was so scared all the time. And when when she would go outside, you know, I would walk with her because I had to protect her from Zeke. And now I'm getting a little better. My fears are somewhat allayed, but it's actually impossible to keep Buddha inside. Like, I would literally never sleep, and she would become incredibly neurotic. And everything's working out great. I feel very comforted about their safety and where I live. But going back to, because I'm rambling, if you read this thread and you read, like, for other people who have pets, because we know that, like, if we come home and our animal that we share our home with is terribly injured, and we don't have the money to pay for their treatment, and, you know, or we come home and we can't find them, it's pretty much a matter of just fate. You just kind of got to, like, pray to the universe, man. And if you have a terribly injured animal and you go to the vet, unless you have a really nice vet who's willing to do a payment plan, or you have relatives who are willing to lend you the money, the option is, well, just kill them. You're lucky. It's going to cost you thousands of dollars, or, you know, they don't. It's not like a human. So that's where these fears come from, I think. A lot of where these fears come from. Now, there's also fears about, you know, of course, later on, you know, people start to talk about other fears. And, you know, I'm not just saying, taking away from the terrible things. Look, my relative's in hospital. It was awful, you know. I'm terribly worried about him. And, you know, all that kind of stuff. But it's different with your non-human refugees. It's different because, first of all, you don't even get the sympathy, you know. It's like, if that was my child that had gone missing, guarantee you my relative wouldn't have been like, oh, come on, you know, just relax or whatever. It would be just, their sympathy would be there. So I hope I'm making sense, because it's all very disjointed. But this was what I've been thinking about over the last week, and I'm finally like, no, I have to talk about it. There's lots of other things to talk about, but it was sort of prompted by these things that happened, and I haven't had a chance to talk about them. It was actually, like, it's a relief, and a lot of people have been saying it's a relief, because, you know, the problem is like, regular society is going to sort of ridicule it. They really will. They'll ridicule these fears about our non-human refugees that we care for and things like that. Because to them they're just commodities, and it's like, yeah, it's sad and everything, but just get over it, you know. Or you know, my goodness, you know, making a big fuss, or you know, they're sort of like stop being so irrational. Everything's gonna be fine. I mean, most of the time, everything's fine. Buddha's fine. Jebby's fine. There's a very strong chance that Duffy's fine. Well, of course, I don't know. And everybody else who's terrified, everybody's okay. You know, everybody in their family's okay. But there is a very real reason for these fears that are so strong and very, very, you know, there are very real reasons behind it. Not just the fact that we respect animals, not just the fact that we recognize that they're non-human persons and that they are sentient and that they feel pain and suffering and that they have an interest in continuing to live and they want to feel good just like we do and all that. But there are very real societal, legal reasons for us to be highly anxious, way more so than we would be if we had a human in our care. I believe so. With regard to the external help that you can get, not with regard to the actual being and their welfare. I mean that is equal, you know. But with regard to the help, the people you can turn to, what you can expect, you know, what can be done to help you, that is very, very different. Because animals are commodities; they're pieces of property, and it's a very terrifying situation. And I don't like owning. I don't want to own somebody, because it's a terrible tragedy. And again, I acknowledge that there are people over the world who literally have this fear over their with their human children, because there are no contingencies, there's no legal rights, you know, their societies do not provide for them. And my heart goes out to them, because I know what that's like. I don't know what it's like if I had a human child, because in my society, it's a wealthy society and there's a lot of money, and unfortunately, all the money comes from, oh my goodness, I just found out that New Zealand provides a third of the world's dairy. A third. Okay, that is just give you an idea about the strength of the dairy industry in my country. We're a country of population 4 million. The size of square miles is like, if you look on a map, we're very small. I don't know what state we're equal to in America, but we're equal to like one of the smaller states, if that. But we provide a third of the world's dairy products. It's huge. But anyway, I digress. That will be definitely something to revisit. But that's what it's like for these people. And, you know, and I think about this all the time, because I mean, that's what it's like for these people in these countries and these places where there's no contingency for their children. And obviously not for their pets either. In fact, there was a story that I saw recently where there was a story about people who would rather adopt. They were choosing to adopt, like save a homeless dog rather than actually get their own home. There were homeless people in America that were choosing to provide companion, you know, care. You know, they recognized that, you know, the dogs were in a way worse position than they were in a country like America. But anyway, this is just, it's all so wrong. There's so much money, there's so many resources that we're wasting. Even 6.2 billion people, you know, is it's way out of control and everything like that. But it's definitely more manageable than the way we're managing it. And as with regards to the billions of non-humans who are completely and utterly screwed, you know, we just need to eradicate domestication, and that will just, you know, we need to do that. And you know, obviously the sort of practicalities of it, there are literally millions of stray dogs and cats and all kinds of other animals in some of the cities and in some of the countries where, like these countries where, you know, their children can't go to the doctor if their children are sick. A mother, you know, is the same way as we are with our non-humans, is she's like, my goodness, please don't let my child get sick, because you know the government's not going to help me and my community's not going to help me and I can't pay for this, you know. So that's this, when you come to countries like that and the millions of cats and dogs in the street and other animals, you know, there's just zero chance for them. So you know, it's a huge amount. It's just an incredibly overwhelming problem, practically speaking. But the only way we're ever going to change it is by changing the paradigm of thinking anyway towards, you know, people, oppressed people, and just, you know, the poorer people of the world, and you know, towards non-human animals as well. And you know, the disgusting, I mean, one of the things about living in this, in like being part of a wealthy society, being a member of a wealthy society, apart from the fact that I'm incredibly lucky, is the absolute disgust that I feel about my society and the waste. The amount of food that we throw away is disgusting. The amount of garbage that we create, it's just not Oh, it's just not fair. It sounds so childish to say that, but it's not fair. And it can change. There are people, there's enough food in one, probably in New York City to feed like, oh gosh, so many starving people. And this is food I'm talking that gets biffed in the bin. And I'm talking like eradicating animal use and everything. Eradicating, animal agriculture and animal use, and we're still gonna have to figure out a way to help feed these other po place or these other people. We are gonna have to take responsibility for that. I want to take responsibility for that. I want to, I want to do it. It's, I don't know, man. Sometimes it's like, it's overwhelming to want something so bad and not be doing anything about it. I don't do a heck of a lot about that. But boy, just give me a way to do something and I will. And I think promoting veganism definitely does. And I think, awakening people's consciousness to non-violence is the way. I mean, that's what I'm doing. That's what I'm trying to do. And I'm trying as an individual as best I can to reduce my own consumption. And I am far from where I need to be. Far from where I need to be. Okay, it is a journey, but it is a journey of getting rid of selfishness and the sort of the way that I've always lived. I've always had anything I ever wanted. I mean, I may not have a lot of disposable income, but I create a lot of waste. And yeah, I am day by day, I'm becoming a better citizen. And I think that that's just, we need to ask that of people. They need to examine their own lives. And I, like I say, I'm in New Zealand. I'm in Auckland. I'm dealing with this community of people. And I love meeting people from other places. I met somebody from the African continent, and I barely got a chance to speak to them. And I would love to have spoken to them more. But anyway, those are all issues that are millions of podcast episodes worth. But anyway, I just wanted to talk about that I really relate to everybody's fears, and I don't think they're irrational at all. And I mean, nobody said they were. Nobody was sitting there saying, this is all irrational. So I'm glad that people realize that. And I feel the same way, and it's there's a very real reason for it. It's what I've just talked about, and I'm sure that everybody can relate. And I'm very glad that you're all out there that I can talk to and get the genuine understanding rather than this kind of, typical kind of like status quo reaction that makes it hard to share anything and to get any understanding, to get any comfort, because that's all I can do now. I can't do anything. I don't know, like, this is sort of the reality of the situation, like with the police and everything. I mean, literally, the police really can't do a heck of a lot. Cats are very small, and they, could be anywhere. But you could say the same about children, I guess. And there are a lot of, I don't know. So, anyway, that's my podcast, and I really think everybody, and one of the really cool things about the forum is that there are people on there that I'm meeting who have listened to my podcast. And I didn't know that, I've never, like, don't have a huge amount of contact with a lot of people who actually listen. Like, so it's like, obviously, I'm get very personal. So I've talked about really personal things, and then they've all heard it, and I've never gotten a chance to hear their stories because I didn't know who they were. And we don't always email each other. People don't always email, and I don't expect them to. But it's like, oh, I listened to your podcast, and I've listened to, I know about your stories and stuff. And I'm like, oh wow, and there's somebody that I've never met before, and like, obviously, we're just meeting online, but it's really nice because now I can hear their story and they can tell me what's going on with them. And I think that's really cool because, obviously, we all sort of share the same interests, and we definitely have the same ideas and, desires and things. So it's really cool to connect on that forum. I love it. It's helping me a lot. So I'm really glad that it happened. And it just shows that, there's more and more people who are coming out and sort of really, this vegan movement, it's really happening. And, I really love it. And other good news, I finally set up the stall again. It did definitely go on hiatus there for a while because of all those other things like school and then this somebody got sick, but we've been doing it for 3 weekends in a row, and the weather's been beautiful, and it's kind of strange without the wall, but I didn't really take advantage of that wall for as much as I could have anyway. But the square is beautiful, and I figured out a way to sort of, I switched the signs around. I just kind of stick them to the front of the other sign. I can't have all the signs up at once, but at least I switched them around because I stick them to the ones that I stuck around the table. So I switched them up. And we also stick them to the side of the bench that we're sitting on, so that people are walking up the street and they're not at eye level, but the street is sloped, so when you're a few meters away, it's almost at eye level if you look at the side of the bench. But we have to vacate the bench. We don't have to, but we're going to vacate the bench because the skateboarders really want to use it, and I don't want to like cramp their style, and we don't need to sit on the bench. And it turns out that when we moved away from the bench and moved out into the sidewalk's really wide in that place, more people stopped. So I'm going to do that anyway. So William, if you're listening, I think it was a great idea to move the table out, and I'll try to bring my stool so that we can take turns sitting down if we want to, so we don't have to stand the whole time. But anyway, so I did the stool, and William took some photos, which was really cool. And it's a beautiful place. Like I say, Aotearoa Square is a beautiful gathering place, and I think it's going to be a great summer. I can't wait to make the stool bigger, and I still have all those plans that I talked about in my last podcast. But in the meantime, like I said, we're just going to keep doing our little thing, and it is something. And it is something, you know. So there you go. Okay, so thanks for listening, and I'll be back. Bye.